From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The police killing of Rayshard Brooks last Friday in the parking lot of a Wendy's in Atlanta, Georgia, has kept lit the flame of protest around the nation against racist police violence. Mr. Brooks fell asleep in line at a Wendy's drive-thru, and after police were called, video footage shows him cooperating peacefully. Still, the police decided to arrest him, at which point Brooks struggled and tried to run away with one of the officer's tasers in his hand. A coroner's report on Sunday ruled his death a homicide. The Wendy's outside where the killing took place became the site of protests a day later, and the restaurant was burned to the ground. Atlanta's police chief has resigned, and Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms said the use of force was not justified. We now turn to Cliff Albright. He's the co-founder of Black Voters Matter. He's a radio host, writer, consultant, and social justice activist, and a frequent guest on our program. Welcome back to the show, Cliff.
Thank you, Sonali.
It seems to me that incidents like the one where Mr. Brooks was killed happen all the time, and we are only now seeing mainstream outrage because of the movement around George Floyd's killing. The fact that the New York Times did this detailed analysis of minute by minute what happened in the encounter. Ordinarily, a case like this one, where a victim showed even a tiny bit of resistance or struggle, would just have been, I feel, set aside, pushed under the rug, and assumed to be one where the police were in the right, right?
Yeah, I think it's the combination of a couple of things. One, I think obviously we're in the midst of a huge protest movement. There's greater awareness around what happens and more importantly, what leads up to those moments, right? So even before the moment where he showed some level of resistance or running away, you know, the bigger questions are this, two things. One, all of this started because he was asleep in his car. And it really raises the issue of why is it that the Black man being asleep in his car, instead of the first question being asked being, is he okay? The more important question that they ask is, oh, is he a threat, right? And then they answer that by saying, yes, he is a threat. And so just the very nature of why police are even called for certain events causes this incident to be questioned. And then the second piece is that whole interaction took place for around 40 minutes before it even got to the point where he started to run. And so again, why is he being questioned for 40 minutes over essentially being asleep in his car when he literally lives just two blocks away? There are so many other options that they could have pursued, not even, you know, at the point of the shooting, but before it even got to that point, before, you know, they again continue to view him as being a threat. And so those are questions that normally, as you say, we wouldn't be asking. But given everything that we've been going through for the past 3 weeks, given everything that we've known, everything that we've been going through really for the past years of Black Lives Matter, people are now, more people are starting to ask those questions.
And in fact, I'm so glad you brought up the fact that there was this really lengthy interaction with police, which is so worth examining. And we want to play one of the videos in the New York Times as analysis of the encounter. We see a number of pieces of video footage, much of it which is the body camera footage from the officers. And it's incredibly instructive to see the interaction where Mr. Brooks is trying to be as cooperative as he can. And you just have to ask yourself, at least I asked myself, would they have done this to a white man? If it was a white man standing in place saying, let me just walk home, the cops would very likely have simply said, you're free to go. Here is a short excerpt of that encounter.
I don't care about, I can walk home.
Why would you walk home?
I just don't want to be in violation of anybody. I can walk, my sister's house is right here.
Do you think that you'd be in violation of something if you were to drive your vehicle?
If you know, if that's less possible for me to park here, lock the car up, and do everything that I need to do within the presence of you guys, I can just go home. I have my daughters there right now. My daughter's birthday was yesterday.
All right. Hold on, Mr. Brooks. Will you take a preliminary breath test for me? Yes or no?
I don't want to refuse anything.
It's yes or no. It's completely up to you.
Yes, I will.
Okay, just wait here while I grab.
And that is a video of the encounter between Rayshard Brooks and Officer Garrett Rolf within the hour of Mr. Brooks's killing. And it shows, Cliff, to me so clearly how this man, he's a father, he really just wanted to cooperate. The officer seemed determined in some way to entrap him. You could tell that the cops were basically there to arrest a man who had fallen asleep in the parking lot. He was not driving drunk. He was not armed. He was not being confrontational or volatile in any way. This just could have ended with Mr. Brooks walking away alive had the cops simply chosen to let him go, right?
Exactly. And, you know, so picture yourself in his situation, right? You're explaining what the situation is, right? You're being cooperative, you're answering questions, you're even offering to walk if need be, right? You do this for 40 minutes, 41 minutes, and then you find yourself being handcuffed. And given all that we know, all that he already knew, all of his lived experiences, all that we've seen over the past 3 weeks, what we've seen with George Floyd at that moment, what do? You panic, right? He was literally running and fighting for his life. And so we've really got to ask the questions around why the police, this is exactly why we say defund police, right? Why they called for this situation to begin with? Why did they interrogate him for 40 minutes? Why did they reach the conclusion that the only option they have is to arrest him? And then the ultimate question, regardless of whatever happened, whether he was drunk or whether he resisted, ran, whatever, why did they choose to shoot him? Right? When he's out of the distance, when he can't harm them, when he's running away, he was shot in his back. These are the questions that we have to ask. And we're tired of asking these questions repeatedly. And we're especially tired of it when what we've seen is you've been seeing on social media all these examples of all these other white suspects who had tasers, who took the tasers, who there are videos going around of white suspects just tearing up the police, right? And somehow they get to walk away. They get to stay alive. But in this situation, he gets shot. Rayshard Brooks gets shot in his back, leaving his children, leaving his family, leaving, you know, there was a very painful press conference that his family did today that ultimately ended because his family broke down in such pain and trauma over this. These are the things that we're tired of dealing with and we're tired of asking these questions about. And that's why people are increasingly demanding that we defund police. Yeah, and you know we're holding out hope. You know, the district attorney here is in a race. He's in a runoff race, and so there's a lot of politics involved in this. He surprised many people by charging officers in another incident that took place a couple of weeks ago with some young college students. And so any minute now, literally, he can have a decision on that. The mayor did take some action. The police chief did resign, although it appears that the police chief is still working for the department in some capacity, and activists here are not happy about that. And so, you know, we've got demands for the mayor, right? The mayor who right now is being considered for a vice presidential position, but there's some serious issues right here at home, right here in Atlanta, that we need her to take care of in terms of her police department. There's still a lot to be asked in terms of, you know, who's going to take leadership and what are their credentials going to be in terms of having a real commitment to not just police reform, but even to, you know, reducing budgets and just changing the entire culture and purpose of this police force. So there's a lot left to be seen out of the mayor and out of the police force here.
Mayor Lance Bottoms has emerged as one of the strong voices against President Donald Trump. She's spoken out strongly about him, about his invocation of George Floyd's name recently when Trump claimed that the economic upturn was a good thing for the dead victim. But we often see that liberal mayors may look more strongly progressive from the outside, and closer examination shows a different dynamic between the community that these mayors oversee and the mayor themselves. We see that, for example, in Seattle and even in Washington, D.C. What is the relationship between protesters, the Black Lives Matter movement, activists like yourself, and Mayor Lance Bottoms in Atlanta?
Yeah, I mean, the activists, protesters have been very critical. You know, there are some things that the mayor, to be clear, there's some things that the mayor did, and soon after she was elected, that she delivered on. She did promise to end cash bail. She has not quite ended cash bail, though, right? Cash bail still exists. And in fact, one of the main criticisms that activists have had of her is that protesters that were arrested during these protests for curfew violations, we're not getting the same bail reform policies and not getting the support of the city's public defender, right? And so what we saw was that there was a difference. Only in certain situations are you getting the benefit of her so-called ending of cash bail. And the protesters that have been on the street have not been getting that benefit. That's one of the big issues that activists here are very upset with the mayor about. Another issue that we saw that activists, you know, took note of is that when the curfews were in place, that we were getting nightly text messages, right? Emergency broadcasts saying, oh, you know, it's 15 minutes to curfew, make sure you get inside. We didn't see anything like that in regards to like the COVID crisis, right? Like we weren't getting emergency text messages about, you know, staying at home or about informing people what their rights are, right? In terms of rent or any of around health or of testing, the availability of testing. And so when it comes to limiting our rights, right, when it comes to warning us of potential punishment, then all of a sudden the city's full resources and communication resources are available. But when it comes to protecting our rights, when it came to the election that took place here, there was no emergency broadcast message around our voting rights, right? And so there's a lot of issues where activists in this community are not quite happy with Mayor Bottoms.
And in fact, I'm so glad you brought that up, because it was less than a week ago that Georgia's primary was held completely riddled with huge problems, particularly for voters of color, where this massively expensive new voting system somehow did not function in areas where Black voters were concentrated. The day ended with more investigations than actual election results. Do you see the issues of police violence against Black Americans in Georgia linked to the efforts to suppress the Black vote? Are they part of the spectrum of racism in Georgia?
Oh yeah, I mean, definitely, without a doubt, they're interconnected in so many ways, right? They're interconnected in the ways that, you know, our very voting rights and the ways that our voting rights have always been denied in this country have always been enforced by police, right? And it was police and other law enforcement agencies, right? It was state troopers in Alabama that beat up marchers going across the bridge. It's quite often police officers at polling places that are intimidating voters away. And so there's a lot of connections between that. But one of the most important connections is this: when you restrict the vote, when you keep those that are most impacted by racial injustices, when you keep those folks, with our community, from being able to vote, what you're doing is you're keeping us from being able to pick the very people who have the power to change these systems, right? When you suppress the vote, you can even suppress the whole message around defunding the police, right? You can make sure that we don't have the power to put in people that are actually going to act on that message. In fact, we might even be trying to put in people that come out of that movement, but we can't. It's harder to put them in when the vote is being suppressed. So there are so many connections between the use of law enforcement and voter suppression, right? In fact, you know, the slogan even, to serve and protect, what we often see is that what they're doing is they're serving and protecting a certain status quo. Mm-hmm. And voter suppression serves to maintain that exact status quo.
Let's go back to the issue of Rayshard Brooks's killing that has sparked mass protests, resulted in the Wendy's outside where he was killed being burned to the ground. We heard Housing Secretary Ben Carson in an interview over the weekend say that, well, the Brooks shooting was not as clear-cut, quote-unquote, as George Floyd's killing. Stacey Abrams, the gubernatorial candidate, who is now a strong candidate for Joe Biden's running mate, said that it it was a clear-cut murder. How do you view these officials? And then, of course, you also had the Supreme Court ruling on, well, it wasn't even a ruling, it was a decision on Monday, where the Supreme Court chose to not take on the immunity that police enjoy in legal cases around police violence. It was interesting that the lone dissenter, well, actually, I shouldn't say the lone dissenter, but one of the dissenters was conservative Justice Clarence Thomas, who ordinarily votes, you know, in as conservative a manner as possible, but took issue with the court's silence on police immunity. So there's a lot of Black leaders speaking out. They're not all in agreement. And I'm wondering where you, how you assess the way in which the country is viewing cases such as Rayshard Brooks and what people are saying, particularly the people who I quoted.
Yeah, so a couple of things to keep in mind. One, regardless of the circumstances, whether it was a matter where the police officer's knee was on his neck, or whether it was a matter where he's being questioned when he shouldn't be being questioned, or being shot in the back, falling asleep in your car should not amount to a death sentence. It's that simple, right? There is no gray area in that. And that's exactly what happens in this situation, that falling asleep in his car led to a death sentence, and a death sentence imposed as he was running away. And so there's no need to get into the subtleties of, you know, is it 100% wrong that he's dead, or 99% wrong that he's dead? He should not be dead. In terms of the policies, right, what we're seeing is that there's disagreement, or there's some, you know, gnashing of teeth from some folks that say, oh, defunding the police, you're going too far. And you know, you heard Representative Clyburn say that our communities want police. No, that's not true. What our communities want is safety. And we have been conditioned and miseducated to believe that the only way to have that safety is to abide by and to put up with a certain amount of over-policing and unnecessary death in our communities from the hands and violence at the hands of the police. We've been conditioned that if you want to be safe, this is the only way that you can have it. And that's a lie. It's simply not true, right? And so what we're saying, and what folks in the street are saying, is that we've got to reimagine something different. And the truth is, it doesn't even take a drastic reimagining. Because we've been in this country, in these cities, in these states, we've been really good at defunding stuff. The problem is that we've been defunding the wrong things. We've been defunding youth services and education and health services, right? So they know how to get this done. And we have a whole lot of smart folk who know how to get this done. The question is there a commitment? Is it consistent with the values, right? Is there the political will to see us get this done? But we shouldn't get this confused, that our communities that all we want is to have policing. We want safety. And as long as we keep that in mind, everything else will flow from that.
Finally, Cliff, one of your main issues that you focus on is voting and voting rights. What is the status currently of last week's election in Georgia in terms of election results, and what investigations are happening from here on out? I understand that there are still thousands of mail-in ballots that haven't been counted yet. People are deeply worried about November's general election.
Yeah, I can't give my actual opinion of what the status is, because the real status is that what we had was what you could gently call a crap show. Mm-hmm. And we have investigations going on, which is really rich, right? Because essentially what you have is the Secretary of State really investigating himself, right? The Secretary of State, Raffensperger, is trying to blame everybody else, county officials, right? Everybody else, voters themselves, for what happened on our last week's election, when in fact it was his doing. It was his failure to effectively administer the vote by mail process, right? A lot of those lines and a lot of people that were in those lines were online because they requested an absentee ballot and never received it. My son, one of my children requested an absentee ballot, never received it, was forced then to go early vote on the last day of the election and stayed in line for 6 hours.
Wow.
For 6 hours. We were at polling places on election day where people were online 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours. We were at one polling place where the voting didn't even start for 4 hours or 5 hours after it was supposed to officially open. But as you pointed out earlier, this was in predominantly Black communities, right? In Black parts of the state, not even just in Metro Atlanta, but in other parts of the state that are predominantly Black, but we traveled to white parts of the state, and white folks were just strolling in, just like in and out. Like it was just, like they were at a picnic or something. No waits, no seats that had to be put out for long lines. And so what we've seen is that this wasn't an across the board failure. This was a failure which targeted particular voters, that targeted Black voters and brown voters. And it's consistent with what we've seen out of the Secretary of State, this Secretary of State, as well as the previous Secretary of State, who then rewarded himself by getting control of the governor's mansion. And so the status right now, but in spite of this, what's incredibly impressive and what we were so impressed with as we were talking to folks online, as we were going to polling places and feeding folks and providing water and giving out masks, because again, all of this is in the midst of a health pandemic, right? But what was powerful was that folks stayed in those lines. And in spite of all this, what we've seen, we saw a record turnout that surpassed 2008 and even surpassed 2016 in some metrics. And so we're hopeful and more votes are coming in, and we're hopeful for what this bodes for November, but there's a lot that we've got to get right between now and November. And part of what we want to get right is that we're actually calling for the Secretary of State to resign. If he doesn't resign, we're willing to launch a campaign to see him recalled.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Cliff, as always, for joining us. I'm sure we'll have you back on again in the near future.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
Cliff Albright has been my guest. He's the co-founder of Black Voters Matter. He's a radio host, writer, consultant, and social justice activist. We've been discussing, in addition to the recent elections in Georgia, the killing by police of Rayshard Brooks that has revived and helped continue the protests against police violence. I'm Sonali Kulhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.